wake on up. Wake up. With a nice cup of Joe.
What's up, Joe, bro?
Featuring Joe Spadoni.
He's an Italian.
And Joe, the Butcher Boy Shasky.
I am slippery.
Oh!
The best part of waking up is morning roast in your cup.
It is the morning roast, man, on 95.7 The Game.
Jonathan Flamingo.
Happy hump day, people. Happy hump day.
Yeah, happy Wednesday. Welcome back. It's the Morning Roast. No Spadoni. It's Grandy in alongside Joe Shasky is always here on 95.7 The Game. We've got Dave Fleming coming up in 30 minutes at 8:30 as we will continue to react to the latest Giants loss. Another really disappointing performance. They've now lost 5 games in a row. They're 2-11 in their last 13. They're back to 500. So we will get back to that. But Shasky, we do have an update on Jonathan Kuminga, which means it is time for the Kuminga Crisis.
Kuminga Crisis! Jonathan
Kuminga.
Give it to me.
That is so good. Anthony Slater published a quick story in ESPN earlier today. Let me just read the first lead to you. Quote, this is Anthony Slater again in ESPN. The Golden State Warriors made another push to retain Jonathan Kuminga over the past several days, but the restricted free agent is continuing to decline their two-year, $45 million contract offer, sources told ESPN on Wednesday. Kuminga's decision is due in large part to the Warriors' insistence on having a team option for the second season and their unwillingness to let him maintain the built-in no-trade clause, sources said. That is the update, one of the updates, from Anthony Slater on the Kuminga crisis.
I mean, what are we doing? Like, honestly, like, what is everyone doing? Either you guys can kiss and make up and move on together, or you can't. We need to, like, we need to have some conclusion to this. Like, they need to know right now whether Jonathan Kuminga coming back on this one-year deal, this whatever the qualifying offer, just straight up, is he going to be a malcontent? Probably yes. Probably yes. Probably should move him. I don't need any more drama in that locker room. And Jonathan Kuminga, hey, dude, read the room, doggy. Read the room. You want to go play for the Suns? Have at it. Like, straight up. You want to go to the Suns? Have at it. How has that worked out for Jordan Poole playing somewhere that stinks?
Not up to him. The Warriors have to agree to the sign-and-trade.
No, I understand that. But I think Jonathan needs to just come out and say, either I am never playing for you ever again, and I would rather play for the Suns, or take the offer where you're the fourth highest-paid player on the team. Like, that's pretty fair.
More from Slater on ESPN. His agent, Kuminga's agent, Aaron Turner, presented the Warriors a few frameworks during a pair of summer league meetings in Las Vegas, including a three-year deal worth around $82 million, which would be about a little more than $27 million per year. That allowed the Warriors to stay below the second apron to use the taxpayer mid-level. Slater later writes that the Phoenix Suns have upped their proposal to Jonathan Kuminga for 4 years and $90 million, including a player option for the final season. That has been the most lucrative push for Kuminga in the sign-and-trade market, but the Warriors remain uninterested in the trade return from the Suns, and for what it's worth, the Kings as well. So as of now, no matter what those teams are offering Kuminga, it does not matter because the Warriors are refusing to accept those returns on a sign-and-trade.
It's just this whole thing is just giving me a giant headache. It's just giving me a giant... I see everyone's point of view. I'm not faulting Jonathan Kuminga for feeling like he's been stymied by the coach, the organization, the situation, all that. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm also like not just giving him up for nothing. If I'm the Golden State Warriors, I see both parties. The part that I am like exasperated, or whatever the hell the word is.
Exacerbated.
It's just been going on forever.
Yep.
It's been going on forever. So to me, it's like either you guys kiss and make up or just get rid of them. Like, this can't keep going on. You guys clearly aren't on the same page. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
This cannot continue. This is that dysfunctional relationship of those two people that you know that like that break up, get back together, break up, get back together, and are always hammered at the bar fighting in front of everyone. And you're like, you guys clearly hate each other. What are we doing here? You might be better off together now, but we know where this leads to. You're going to get angry with each other. I'm not mad at any individual in this thing. I'm not mad at Dunleavy. I'm not mad at Lacob. I'm not mad at Steve Kerr, because I actually understand everyone's points of view. I'm definitely not mad at JK. You know who I'm most mad at?
Who?
The agent.
Aaron Turner.
I'm mad at the agent. I think the agent has failed to accurately present the market conditions to his client in Jonathan Kuminga. No one is giving you $30 million a year. Nobody. This is like the house that's on sale. There's a house in my neighborhood right now that's on sale up in the Russian River. Everything is in that area for a particular price point. And this guy is three times the price point. Not two times. Three times the price point of everyone else in the market. It's a beautiful spot. It's got unbelievable acreage. There's no doubt about it. But it's you're not reading the market properly. And that's what I feel. I feel like the one individual who deserves the most criticism in this entire situation is Jonathan Kuminga's agent. His agent is in over his head.
I think that's fair. Now, we don't know what the Warriors offered Kuminga a year ago, and maybe they didn't get any offers. But part of that might be because they drove such a hard bargain in the very early part of the negotiations and were requesting $35 million a year, and the Warriors said, well, you're not even in the same ballpark as us, so we're just going to move on. That might be the point. More from Anthony Slater. Quote, Kuminga prefers the long-term offers presented by the Kings and Suns because he believes they signify a fresh start, a larger guaranteed role, a promised starting position, and a greater level of respect and career control shown in part through the player option, which are reportedly being offered by the Kings and the Suns, comparison to the Warriors, who are offering a two-year deal with a team option. So, as far as I can tell, Shasky, what is going on here and what really is the crux of this disagreement, and I think it's what the Warriors are finally coming to terms with, and I think they're grappling right now with the reality that they're going to lose this situation. In their mind, they're going to lose it. It might mean that he comes back, it might mean that he leaves, but the way in which it happens, they're going to lose this thing. The crux of this argument isn't about money. It's not about Kuminga being paid $30 million a year. That's not how I feel. What Kuminga values more than anything else, if the money is even close to even if the Warriors are offering more money per year than the Kings or the Suns are, what Kuminga values, it's just in general getting away from Steve Kerr and the Golden State Warriors. But what that means essentially is I want to be a starter.
Yeah.
I want guaranteed 30 minutes a night. I want to be a top two option in an offense, and I want control over how my career plays out. I don't want to be traded wherever the Warriors want to trade me to. I want to choose where I go, so I want either a player option so I can opt out after a year, or I want a no-trade clause so I can tell you, no, I don't want to go to Charlotte or wherever. He wants control over his role and his career. The Warriors are not comfortable giving him that, so he does not want to be a Golden State Warrior. It's not about the money. And I think the Warriors are finally realizing that they burned a bridge with Kuminga in terms of how they handled his role and his minutes to the point where he might turn down more money just to spite you and go somewhere else. That's how I feel.
No, it's you laid it out beautifully. But here's what I would say to you. He doesn't have the equity in the league to get every demand he wants.
Fair, but it's his right to try to get it.
Oh, sure, and it's my right to try to, you know, tell the IRS I don't want to pay taxes. You know what I mean? Like, just because you say it or you feel it doesn't mean that you have the status or the equity or the leverage to pull it off.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yes, of course.
Okay, and then, again, look around the league. Look around the league. Do you understand market conditions, right? Right now. What team is giving him everything he wants? You're not KD. Like, KD can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, get whatever he wants. KD can tear his Achilles and get a maximum contract to the place of his destination and choose who the coach is. JK, you're not on that level. You're closer to the Kevon Looney level. I'm talking about, like, I'm just picking two players. Kevin Durant. Player empowerment can get anything he wants, right? I'm just picking two random players. Kevon Looney, kind of subject to, like, I got to be in the right place, right time. You know, I don't even really get to control my role, whatever. Like, if those were two ends of the bell curve, Kuminga, you're closer to Kevon Looney than you are KD. Read the room, dude. Like, that's where I get kind of, like,
he's
frustrated.
He's not out for asking for a max contract. I mean, I don't think it's about the money. Get him close to $20 million a year, and I think, considering what the Warriors and every other team is offering him, that seems pretty fair. That's what teams are willing to offer him. But it's, I want the right situation. And you could be upset at Kuminga for wanting his own personal role over winning basketball. Like, he's wanting to go to the Suns and the Kings. Spoiler alert, neither of those teams are going to win many basketball games next year, at least my opinion.
I agree with you.
And you can be disappointed at him for wanting what he wants, but it's what he wants. And if he doesn't care about money, he only wants to go where he thinks he has the most opportunity to prove himself and make that next contract even more lucrative, that's not happening here. So by any means necessary, he will want to get out of here. I think there's three ways that this plays out, and I think they're all losses for the Warriors. It's take the Kings or Suns lowball offer, the offer that you have refused to take, right? Welcome back Dario Saric, and welcome Devin Carter, one of the worst rookies in the NBA last year. It's that. Take a lowball offer.
Horrible haircut. Keep going.
That's option number one. That's a loss for the Warriors. Option number two, Kuminga is so upset at you that he's willing to take the $7.9 million qualifying offer and walk away for nothing a year from now. That's also a loss for the Warriors.
But he would also have to play nice, because what good team in the league is taking on someone who's a quote-unquote malcontent and has done all of this? And sure.
That's Kuminga's problem.
That risk.
That's Kuminga's problem. It's not the Warriors' problem.
No doubt.
Whether he signs for $30 million or $5 million, he's leaving the Warriors, and the Warriors are getting nothing in return a year from now. That's the second option. That's also a loss. The third option is the Warriors realize those are their options, and they say, we'd rather drastically overpay him just to make him be willing to put up with the madness that is how he's used in the Warriors system. Just so they can guarantee they don't lose the asset for nothing, they might think about massively overpaying him. The problem becomes, if you overpay him too much, you can't sign Al Horford because you can't go over the second apron and use the mid-level. So then you're screwed there as well. All of those are losses. And if Kuminga just holds strong to the idea that he wants to be away from the Warriors by any means necessary, the Warriors lose.
I think they're losing regardless. And
yep.
I think there's like no other way around this. Like the ship has already sailed. They've lost. It's over. This whole situation is completely insane. But I also think Kuminga loses as well. I think Kuminga's agent is a fool. I think he is.
They mismanaged this guy, from
Aaron
the beginning.
This guy, Aaron Turner, is out here on Twitter responding to people.
Yep.
Is that what high-priced agents do on Twitter? Just respond to egg avatars and random people that happen to be Warrior fans? And I'm not dissing anybody who happened to have him respond to them. That's not what high-priced, high-powered agents do. Top dog agents don't respond on Twitter to random people, okay? So, to me, we could talk about JK and his own individual frustrations. His representation has given him awful counsel.
Yes, no one is denying that.
Period. Awful counsel.
I think literally everyone would agree with you.
Yeah, awful counsel. Like, that's who I'm the most mad at this entire thing. Like, the people that you surround yourself with that have your business interests at heart have done you dirty. Period. And look, have the Warriors made mistakes? Of course they have. I've been extremely critical at usage, not just his role within the team. I hate calling people assets because then there's like this whole property angle, but in terms of the player and their value to you.
Yes.
And being an important cog on your team to winning, or if you've determined that they aren't that, utilizing their ability to net you something back in return. They have screwed up how to value Moody, Wiseman, Kuminga, the entire time, right? Like, all of these guys.
Asset management, yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So all of that is true. But I'm telling you, dude, this agent is a moron. And I hope he's hearing me and listening to me. He's a moron. No one in the league is giving you $30 million. No one. Read the market. It's like me saying, I want to sell my house for $3 million. Your house is not worth $3 million. No one is giving you that. So you can say it all you want. And you are steering your client down the wrong path. Okay, I want to be a top dog guy, starter in the league. How many teams is Kuminga, at his current salary, how many teams is Kuminga a starter in the league? I don't know. Is it 15?
At his current salary, like what he made this past year?
Right now. Right now, just remove money. How many teams is Kuminga starting on? I don't know the answer to that.
A lot of bad teams.
Okay.
All of the bad teams, probably.
So what is that number? 10, 12?
Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, now, amongst those teams of the 10 or 12 that you referenced, now how many are paying you top dollar and saying you are the number one or number two option?
He doesn't want top dollar. He prefers the Suns' offer of 4 years, approaching $90 million, is what Anthony Slater wrote. That is $22.5 million per year on average annual value.
So
that's
not
top dollar.
Okay, so money's not.
I don't think the money is the problem.
All right.
Now, if it's $25 million with the Warriors versus $10 million with the Suns, he would probably be willing to look past his differences with Steve Kerr and take the $15 million richer contract. But if the money is even close to equal. I think, this is my read on the situation, if the money is close to equal, he prefers every other option than the Warriors.
That's how I read it. Then they need to just ship him out now.
Yes, that's probably the best thing they can do.
And they're going
to they're gonna have to be willing to take Devin Carter, Dario Saric, and 2 second-round picks.
Look, I think JK is culpable of not delivering on certain things on his end. I think to a degree he has been a victim of circumstance and of underperformance. And like just there's a lot of factors at play here. No one is without blood on their hands in this entire thing.
I agree.
But I am telling you, this agent has done him dirty in terms of reading the market, reading what his value is, and understanding how to play nicely with these teams. If I am a team on the receiving end who is considering John the Kuminga, I'm looking at this agent and I'm like, hey, dog, we'll bring you in. You should get rid of that guy. Because if you're going to be a problem for Steve Kerr and the Golden State Warriors and this entire time, why would I want to bring that into my locker room?
Yeah, I mean, No one's looking at this situation and wishing they had it on their hands. Restricted free agency is a different animal than anything else in the NBA, and it's never going to happen again in Kuminga's career that he's going to be a restricted free agent.
This is like, you know when Klay Thompson, I wanted the amount of years. It was about years and respect. And these guys get so down the rabbit hole, just in general, I feel like in sports, we get so down the rabbit hole on respect and what I'm due and what I'm owed and how I feel. And this, like, we do this, it's all business. It's all business. No, dude, it's all personal. It's all personal. And the veil of this excuse
that we
use. I don't
think this is personal with Kuminga.
You don't think?
He wants to play a lot of basketball.
You don't think
he
the relationship.
He doesn't think he can do it here.
Time out. You don't think he feels some kind of way about Steve Kerr in general and just.
I think he feels some kind of way about Steve Kerr as a head coach.
That's personal.
As a head coach.
That's
not about
personal.
Steve Kerr the person.
We're talking about seven more minutes a game.
He wants to do what is best. He wants to do what he thinks is best for his career. Now, has he earned the right to get everything that he wants in every contract, in every deal, in every situation? No, he hasn't been good enough. Has his agent royally messed things up? Yes, of course. But all Kuminga can do is do what he thinks is best for his career. And if he thinks what's best for his career is to take a mid-level contract on a perennial loser so he can be for the first time an every night starter, then by all means, dude, go do it. And that's what he's doing. I can't blame him for doing what he's doing.
Yeah, I disagree.
Is it a shame that he and his agent and his whole team allowed it to get to this spot? Yes. It's also a shame the Warriors allowed it to get to this spot. But I can't blame him for doing what he's doing right now. He's just trying to get to a spot where he thinks he can do what's best for his career. And I can't blame the dude for doing that.
I have very little empathy in this entire situation because he had at many times, look, and I've been a Kuminga stan, but at many times he's let himself down by not doing the things on the floor that other teams, forget the Warriors, deem valuable. His price tag is what his price tag is around the league, and his fit around the league is very niche right now because of the things he's failed to deliver on the floor. And that he is in control of. You know, it is what it is. Like, the market has spoken. I think that he has very little leg to stand on here.
He said he's, according to reports, he's more willing to take the Suns' offer of 4 years and $90 million, $22.5 million per year. The Warriors' offer is $22.5 million per year.
They need to just get rid of him and go to the Suns. Like, I don't know what, my stance is pretty straightforward here. Like, this dude's out of his mind. It's the same thing with Klay. Like, all right, good luck.
Klay took less money to go to the Mavericks.
Oh, but it was more years, Mark.
Less money per year.
3 years. I know. That's my point. We get down these rabbit holes.
He wanted out of Golden State as well.
Which is fine. And
That's what Kuminga wants.
Okay.
And
good
luck to him. He's willing to maybe take less or the same amount of money to do it.
No doubt. But I would also say that Klay Thompson earned significantly more runway and leeway and all that stuff. Like, there's a lot that was baked into the Klay thing. But similar to Klay, be careful what you wish for. Because look at the situation Klay landed on. Was it a fruitful situation that he thought he was walking into?
He thought it was.
Yeah. Well,
it turned out to be not.
It's the same thing with Kuminga. Be careful what you wish for. You know? And I would say the same thing to the Warriors.
Well, if Kuminga signs with the Suns, he's not signing with the Suns with the idea that they're going to win a championship next year like Klay thought.
Well, I mean, look.
He could believe that in his mind, but he knows in his heart of hearts if he goes to the Kings, they're not winning a championship. He's valuing minutes and role and career stability over maybe money, but also over winning. And, like, you can be upset at him for valuing those things over the other things, but that's what he's valuing.
Career stability. The Suns have traded everyone away, like, with a flip. I mean, like, stability with the Phoenix Suns? That's a sentence?
For him personally.
Stability with the Sacramento
Kings?
For
him personally.
I know, and that sounds insane to me. Those two organizations are the exact opposite of stability. Are they not? That's where careers go to die.
Are you calling by comparison, the Warriors are the stable franchise?
If we're comparing and contrasting the last 10 years of Sacramento Kings basketball to the Warriors, yes.
Okay.
If we're comparing the last 10 years of Phoenix Suns basketball to the Warriors, yes. We are literally the Kings. And I got friends in Sacramento. I love Casey. I love D'Lo. They'd be the first to admit it. It's one of the poorest run franchises in all of sports. They're the joke of sports. Are they not?
I'm not denying that. Franchise-wide stability is one thing.
Right now, in sports, Cleveland Browns, Sacramento Kings, Phoenix Suns. Like, it's a short list of diaper dandies, and they are them. And I'm not talking about freshman standouts in college. I'm talking about teams that smell like baby diaper.
Franchise-wide stability is different than a dude signing on a team and talking about a singular person's individual stability.
Which I understand.
That's different.
Jordan Poole, two entirely different things. Jordan Poole got to do whatever he... I'm just using this as an example. Got to do whatever he wanted for the last 2 years for the Washington Wizards. How's that working out for him?
Now he's a Pelican.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
And people around the league think it's the worst contract in basketball.
A lot of these guys do this in sports. I want the money and the stability and this.
Kuminga isn't going for the money.
No, I'm not saying. I'm saying a lot of guys do that in sports. They want stability. They want the role. They want this. Be careful what you wish for.
Okay.
Be careful what you wish for.
You have every right to say, Kuminga, what you're valuing is not what you should be valuing. That is fine. I'm not going to argue with you there. I'm just telling you what he's valuing, and the Warriors either can't or refuse to give it to him. And if that's what he wants, then he's not coming back under any circumstance. It's as simple as that.
Then I agree with that.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, Kuminga's wants are like, on the list, we have Steph Curry. We have Jimmy Butler, and we have Draymond Green. All right? Three guys toward the end of their career, and you have an all-time coach, and you have an all-time owner in this particular market, worrying about what Kuminga wants. And like, it sounds absurd. Like, it sounds absurd.
Yeah.
You know what it sounds like?
What?
It's like, hey, do you guys care what Keith Fonhorst wants in the middle of the Joe Montana, you know, Bill Walsh era? That's what it sounds like. It's laughable. Like, it's laughable.
Frankly, I don't even know who that name is,
exactly.
Which is the point you're trying to make.
Do you care what Derek Deese wants in the middle of Steve Young's career? Like, do you care? No, actually, I don't. And look, I want you to be on the team. I want to win. I've been rooting for you. I've been waving the pom-poms. At some point, dude, you're not just a victim.
Yeah.
Like, sign up to play basketball. Let's go. You want to win? You want to be in the playoffs and show out like you did against the Minnesota Timberwolves? Shut up. Sign the tenure. Don't sign the tenure. Be ready to play basketball. I'm sick of you talking.
We got Dave Fleming coming up in a little bit. Before we hit a break, let's sneak in a call on this conversation. Kevin in Pleasanton wants to weigh in. Kevin, what's up?
Hey, guys. It's Sasky, man. You need a Tylenol.
This thing has gone on for months, and I'm exhausted. Are you with me?
Hey, but listen, man. Hey, no, you're totally right with the frustration. However, remember, Steve Kerr is the guy that sat Jason Tatum. I just want to say that. So yes. If you ever think that Steve Kerr has a way of thinking And it's his way or no way. It's a tough, tough place to play when a guy feels that you are not worthy. And he told Jason Tatum, you are not worthy.
Well, they had KD.
Jason Tatum.
I mean, they had KD. Wait, which is just, come on, guys.
Thanks, Kevin.
They had
KD. It's a different comparison.
Hey, Tatum or KD? I'm looking up. Well, who do I go to? I don't know. Hey, Steph, who do you want to play with? Tatum or KD?
All right, we got to go to a break. We got Dave Fleming, voice of the Giants, waiting for us on the other side. We'll get back to Giants with Dave. But if you want to keep weighing in on this Kuminga stuff, again, the update is the Warriors have continued to up their push to retain Kuminga, but he has shown zero interest to accept any of their offers. We will get back to that before the show is over. You can weigh in 888-957-9570. But again, coming up next, which is brought to you by Crystal Geyser Alpine Springwater, it is Dave Fleming, voice of the Giants. Another embarrassing Giants loss. We get into that next on the Morning Roast here on 95.7 The Game. Five games in a row now. They are 2-9 since the All-Star break. They're 2-11 in their last 13 games. They're back at 500 for the first time since they were 1-1, and they're doing it in incredibly frustrating ways. More so than just losing games, they're doing it in special ways.
I don't even know. I'm so frustrated with the Giants. The infield fly in the first inning was just the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. He clearly doesn't know the rules, Elliot Ramos, and I can't believe he went back out there to play defense. The whole thing is just bizarre to me.
Well, let's talk to Dave Fleming about it. Voice of the Giants joining us now on the River Islands guest line. Dave, it's Mark Grandy in for Joe Spadoni, along with Joe Shasky. As always, appreciate your time, and let's just get to what happened in the bottom of the first inning. First and second, one out. It's Ramos at second. Infield fly is called, and he gets thrown out trying to scamper back to second base. We see this happen in Major League Baseball every once in a while, but how can you explain what happened with Ramos on the bases in the first inning last night?
Not very often. I can't remember the last time that I remember seeing it. I do remember Steve Finley. I mean, that's how long ago it was. When did Steve Finley play for the Giants? I remember when he was briefly with the Giants, and I was in like the clubhouse food room, and Steve was having a spirited discussion with a couple other guys about why every infielder should do what Hayes did last night, especially in a big spot, like just let the ball fall and just see what happens. You might steal an out. You might. And the pushback was so strong from a couple guys, like, no, I'm not going to look like an idiot. The ball could bounce the wrong way. Nobody's going to fall for that. You know, it was an interesting discussion, actually. And I thought of that last night because you just don't see it very often. Can't happen. I don't know what else to say about it other than it's just, that's a really bad mistake for a team that's fighting hard and every out matters, every win matters. And unfortunately for Elliot, you know, it's a pattern of there have been some bad base running mistakes lately that don't, you know, fall under the category of not knowing the rules, just bad base running. The defense hasn't been real good. It's frustrating, I'm sure, for him because he's had a solid year as a hitter. He's been one of the Giants' best hitters, but you start to give away a lot of that value when the other parts of your game aren't very well-rounded. And it's probably a good way to kind of understand what's going on with the Giants overall right now, where they're just not diverse enough in the ways that they can beat you. They've talked a lot about getting more diverse, and it's obvious they still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and it's just so frustrating. Like, Elliot does bring things to the table, but defensively feels like you can't go a couple of games without a misread or a bad break or a terrible angle. And then running the bases, he had to play the other day with the slow grounder where he just took off. How do they work on that at the big league level? I mean, I think we all assume every player knows every situation and, you know, they're pros and they have to be. We had David Samson on, who used to run the Marlins, and he's like, hey, a lot of these guys don't actually know situations and the rules like you think that they would. How do these guys get that on the job training with the coaching staff as the season's going on and he goes back out there to play in the outfield? Like, what does that look like in terms of the development of a young player like Ramos?
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer, and it's a good question because it is hard to do at this level. There's so much other stuff that you're working on, you're game planning on. There's just so much going on in these players' lives, on the field, off the field, when you get here. It can be hard to have like a boot camp and go over basics, you know, so a lot of that is what spring training is for, and a lot of that work happens in spring training. I don't think it would be a terrible idea to every month or two have a, you know, a 30-minute quick team-wide refresher on some stuff like that. I don't think that's the worst idea. And I think some teams do that. And the Giants, I know, you know, coming back from the All-Star break, that the first day in Toronto, they went to the ballpark early. Everybody got there at 2, and part of the reason why they got there even earlier than that, but on the field at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, was going over the signs, like a refresher course on all the stuff that everybody needs to know. So some of that stuff does happen. Here's the thing I'll say about Elliot. This is not an issue of not working. Elliot is a worker, big time. Elliot cares. He wants to be a great player. He puts in time. He goes out in the outfield. He tracks balls. He conditions. He works out. Like, Elliot is not a player, and most guys are like this, but I would say even more than most, Elliot is a try-hard player. He just struggles with some of these nuances of the game, and whether that ever gets corrected or not, I don't know, but it definitely limits his ceiling as a player if it doesn't get corrected. The last thing I'll say about Elliot is he's been way less comfortable in left field than he looked to me in center and right field earlier in his career, and I think it's worth at least considering moving him back over to the other side and just seeing if there's something about it. I mean, it sounds simple, but it is different to play the different corners, and I would like to just see, if I were in charge, that would be something I would be considering, is moving back over to the right side and just see if that helps make him a little more comfortable and maybe makes him stop. You know, he said after the game, he's thinking so much out there. Maybe just make it a little more natural for him.
Voice of the Giants, Dave Fleming, with us here on the Morning Roast at 95.7 The Game. Dave, you've seen a lot of Giants seasons. You've seen a lot of great stretches. You've seen a lot of bad stretches. And baseball is such a long season that even in down years, you have good stretches. And even in good years, you have bad stretches as well. So, you've seen, I'm sure, a lot of bad baseball over your years during a couple week stretch, but where does this one rank for you? Because this is, seems like a unique rough stretch of baseball, and it's not just Ramos. There's been issues in center field with Jung-Hoo Lee. There was the really weird play at second base with Casey Schmidt and Tyler Rogers covering first base last night. In terms of all of the rough stretches that you've seen, does this one stand out to you as I don't know, the worst, the most unique? Like, does this stretch stand out to you above all the rest?
No. I mean, I would say this one has been highly disappointing, because I think the Giants really believe, like, their roster's in a better place, and this should be a better team. And so to give away the stuff that they had earned early in the year by building a cushion and putting themselves in the mix and having it sort of all go bye-bye in the span of 2 weeks has been really frustrating for everybody. I look, this team has been, we're talking on after one of the worst games of the year, so it's a bad time to sort of make this point. But, you know, last night aside, they fought their tails off on Monday, Saturday and Sunday against the Mets, spirited, tough, hard-fought games where they're one hit away from winning both of those games. Toronto, the two games in Toronto, same way, against the Dodgers, home run in the ninth inning, two tough, you know, close, right down to the end games against LA that they lost. Like, this isn't a team that's just getting blown out every day. They had the ugly game in Atlanta. They had a bad game last night where they didn't hit at all. Otherwise, you know, this easily could be, what are they, 2-11 or whatever the stretch is. They could easily be, 5-8 or 6-9 or something like that, and we wouldn't be feeling exactly the same way that we are. So, you know, I don't think it's the end of the world what's happened here. It's just that they believe that they're a lot better than this, and I believe they're a lot better than this, and that's the most frustrating part.
What do you make of all the team meetings? You know, I guess there were, you know, Bob was alluding to player meetings, coach meetings, et cetera. How should fans read into that?
Well, I think they should read into it that the team does care, that, and it's not just the manager cares or the general manager cares. The players do care. They're invested in this. This isn't just a, hey, I'm a big leaguer, I'm collecting a big check, and that makes me happy. This team has a bunch of players who care about the bottom line results. But, you know, this is also evidence that meetings don't do a whole lot. You know, you got to go out there and do it. Like, you know, it's one thing to talk. It's another thing to do it. And I think for the Giants, this whole year almost in a way is a lesson in that. Like, they have practiced what they've preached in some ways. They've pushed their starting pitchers more. They've wanted to rely on more of a set lineup. They've wanted to have less platooning. They've wanted to have more stability on the roster. Like, the things that they talked about, they have done. Have they been more athletic? Not, you know, probably not nearly enough. Have they stolen enough bases and put pressure on teams? No. Have they played clean baseball? They have not played very clean baseball overall this year. So, you know, that it, to me, it's like you can talk the talk, but the meetings, the talk, and all that have to be backed up by what you do out there. And so, you know, people want, you know, a manager to flip the spread and go nuts in the clubhouse, and the team leaders to say, you know, you can do that, but at this level, it's about performance, and I'm just not sure how much the talking about it impacts that.
Dave, those of us outside the organization and specifically outside the front office, I'm sure live and die on every game so much more than those inside the organization and inside the front office do. But the trade deadline is now just over a day away, tomorrow at 3 o'clock Pacific. I know the Giants have already bought, they already acquired Rafi Devers, and the plan has been, by all accounts, to continue to buy and support this roster. Do you think that's still the best move to try to buy for the 2025 season?
Well, first, I mean, I think I not that I disagree with what you said, but they're living and dying by every game in there. This is killing them, you know. And the front office is just shocked by what's happened over the last couple weeks. So I know fans are upset, but this Giants team is upset about what has happened. So they are taking this very personally, and there's no doubt that this has changed the way they're thinking about the next 24 hours, no doubt. They were in buy mode. They're still in buy mode in terms of, like, if this is a time teams are willing to deal, the Giants have a lot of evidence that this roster isn't quite good enough yet, that they still have work to do. So I think that they're always in sort of buy mode at all times, but that doesn't mean they're also not now in a mode where if they get an offer for somebody that they think that can help them long term, they wouldn't consider that. So I think it's going both ways now, as opposed to kind of a one-way street before. Be interesting. I mean, most teams in baseball just are not willing to deal these days. Most teams in baseball are so risk averse, are so scared, are so nervous, are so timid that you just don't get a lot of deals. There are a few teams that are willing to do it, and there are a lot of teams that aren't. And I think the Giants have actually jumped into the category of teams that are willing to make moves and be bold and take a risk and risk losing a player who might turn out to be a good player. I bet you 25 out of the 30 teams right now, I would not put in that category. And it stinks for the game. You know, it's in a lot of ways, I think it's embarrassing for the game, the way some of these teams operate, where they're just so afraid of making a mistake. It's a bad way to run a professional sports franchise. A lot of teams do it that way. I'm very happy that I don't think the Giants are doing it that way right now. Buster is definitely not that kind of personality. But that doesn't mean the right deal is going to come up tomorrow and the Giants are just going to do it to do it. That's not the case.
There is a couple of, like, decent stories that are going on this team. Like, Willy Adames right now, batting .341 in July, feels like ever since they got Devers, whether it's he's getting better pitches to look at or there's less pressure on him, or something in between, it just feels like we're seeing the version of Willy Adames we were all hoping when they signed him.
Totally agree. I don't think he's getting better pitches, but he's definitely having way better at bats. And I think there could be something to the fact that, you know, with a stronger core lineup around him, he feels less pressure. You know, some of it might be just adjusting to his new home and feeling different around a new team. And now this is home for him, and he's good with all the off field stuff and, you know, not putting as much pressure in that way on himself. It's a great story. He's been really, really good. I mean, I think you can now see the core of a really good Giants team. Adames and Chapman and Devers is a really good start. And what's been particularly disappointing, I think, is that so many of the other players around those guys, and not that Devers has been lighting it up, but Devers is going to be fine. And, you know, Devers has had a ton going on, too. It's still not even a month of, you know, or basically it's a month of adjustment and new position and all the stuff going on. Devers is going to be fine. But there are probably more questions around everybody else than there were even at the start of the year. And that's, you know, that's a little disconcerting. But I think you're right. There are some positive things that have been happening, some really positive things, actually.
Dave Fleming, voice of the Giants, with us here on the Morning Roast at 95.7 The Game. One of the others, I think you'd probably agree, was the debut of Carson Wisenhunt. Got off to a little bit of a rocky start, gave up a run in the first and then three runs in the second, but shut down the Pirates in the third, fourth, and fifth innings. From your perspective, what did you see from the top pitching prospect in the Giants organization on Monday?
Well, I think he showed some mental toughness for sure, and that's a really good quality. Like, so much of succeeding here is about something more than just the physical. There are a lot of physically talented players who don't make it in the big leagues, and a lot of that has to do with just the ability to fight through adversity, to be mentally tough in the moment, and he definitely showed that, man. His stuff wasn't perfect, and the Pirates had a game plan, and they attacked him early, and instead of just sort of folding and being discouraged, I never saw him look discouraged with the body language out there. And he gave the Giants five innings. You know, when he had a pitch limit of right about what he got to, he has not been built up over the last few weeks. He was earlier in the year and they kind of backed off him. So he had a pitch limit going in that game and he gave him five innings. Like, that is a real positive. He has work to do. Like, there is a ceiling with Carson Wisenhunt that's a lot higher than what we saw on Monday. And so he is not a finished product by any means. But look, we've seen that with a lot of these young Giants pitchers who come up without a ton of experience. You know, I'm not blaming the previous regime, but it's so much of the Giants pitching development the last five plus years has been lacking in volume. There just hasn't been enough pitching that these guys have experienced, and it's hurt them. It's set them back, I think. And so, you know, you got some guys who need to get some more reps in. That Birdsong probably qualifies in that regard. Wisenhunt definitely does. But you can see the reason why people regard him highly. Is he going to be an ace? You know, if he's throwing 92, it's going to be hard for him to be an ace. He can throw a little harder, and if he can sustain that, then the ceiling is raised even higher.
Yes, it's interesting you bring up like the inning logs in the minor leagues. It seems like even the best guys in the minors that are highly touted, 112, 115 innings max, and then they go, all right, year one, MLB, go 150. You know, it's like, whoa, we're in uncharted territory here because you made these guys go three innings every single outing, bringing them up because you want to be delicate with their arm, and then they get to the big, and you're asking more. But that's not where I want to go with this. You're a lover of the game, big picture of MLB, obviously. You've been doing this 20-something years. What was your read on the report about Manfred and Bryce Harper having kind of like a toe-to-toe, if you will, in the clubhouse?
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. I think it's good for the commissioner and the owners to understand The players union has been in a bit of chaos, and I'm not an insider on any of this, but it seems like the players union hasn't been quite as cohesive and organized as in the past. And I think the owners maybe not sensing, I'm not saying they're looking to take advantage of anything, but feeling like maybe they're not going to get as much resistance on that stuff. And I think it's good for everybody to get a bit of a reality check. Like, if that really is the idea, to totally overhaul the economics of the game, I think everybody needs to understand there's going to be huge resistance to that. And there would have to be, if for that even to be considered, there would have to be massive concessions on the other side. And if those concessions are not palatable, then I think everybody needs to go into the next calendar year with a different idea of how this might go. So that's what I took away from it, is none of us, nobody wants to lose actual games. There's going to be, you know, after next year, there's going to be a lockout. It's not going to be, I say it's not a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal, but it's not going to impact. It doesn't have to impact any games. That's just sort of the way these negotiations go. But I think yesterday or whenever it happened was a reminder that the tenor of this could change quickly, and everybody needs to realize that and not go into this, ignorant of that fact. Like, we want to protect the 2027 season. It's not in the game's best interest. Everybody is getting rich off this sport right now. Everybody. The owners and the players are all doing extremely well. There are issues in the game. There always are. We can work on those issues without torpedoing a season. And I think if the Harper incident was just a reminder of how delicate this can be, then I take it as a good thing. Like, that to me is a good thing.
Dave, just one more from me. I want to go back to some of the team's struggles of late. So many fans, and we see it on social media, I'm sure you hear it, the struggles that are going on. We're all so quick to blame Bob Melvin, the manager, and the coaching staff. I'm sure that Bob Melvin and the staff do so much more behind the scenes than any of us are privy to, and you can speak to that if you want to. But just speaking generally, when a team is in a funk like this, and a funk not just not getting hits in clutch situations, but committing some mental mistakes pretty often, what is there that a manager and a coaching staff can do to try to help get a team out of that sort of thing?
Yeah, I would say there's two things. Number one, you can change the way you prepare a team for a game. You can change the routine. If you really believe, like, we need, you can demand of your players. Now, some players might not like that, but you can demand a different pregame routine, a different level of sort of work habit behind the scenes. You can adjust playing time. Like, you can, you know, one thing the manager is in charge of is playing time. And if you're trying to send a message, or you're trying to reinforce a point, or you're trying to emphasize one thing over another, you can use at-bats, innings, as a way to do that. Outside of that, you know, I mean, so much of this is baked in with the team you have, the roster you have, the work you do before the season. I mean, it's hard to totally change once the season's going, but look, we all believe Bob and his coaches, they are grinders. They care deeply about this team and about winning games. Nobody questions that. But it's also false to say there's nothing that those guys can do about it. There are things that you can do. I'm not saying those are the right things to do. I'm not saying that anybody should do that. But it's not true that a manager or a coach has no options when it comes to, like, trying to steer a team in a certain direction. I don't believe that. I think a manager does, and Bob does, and I think he would agree with me in saying that.
Dave, great stuff as always. We appreciate your time, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Better times are ahead. Whether they're ahead today or not, it is better than what it's been. So, gosh, they could use a win today, couldn't they?
They could.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'll see you, Dave. Hope all's well with the fam.
Everybody's good. Thank you for asking. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Dave. That's Dave Fleming, voice of the Giants, with us here on the Morning Roast at 95.7 The Game. A lot of interesting stuff there. And I wanted to ask that question at the very end, because so many of us, and we've been talking about it, we get it from so many fans, you got to let Bob Melvin go. And, I mean, he never going to say that, and I didn't want to phrase it that way, but there is a lot that a manager can do in moments like this, whether it is dangling playing time in front of a player to try to get them motivated. So a lot of good stuff there from Dave, as always.
Yeah, it's just the Giants make me sad, and it's just...
You want to talk about Kuminga and the Warriors instead? Does that make you less sad?
Look, I think the Rafi Devers situation with Boston is a good jumping off point actually on this conversation. I used to be the you can't get rid of someone. That's your best player guy. Like, I go back, one of the worst trades of my life. T.O. didn't file for free agency properly and was still under team control for one more year and did not want to play for you anymore. And you ended up trading him for a third-round pick and Brandon Whiting. It was one of the worst deals of all time to the Eagles, okay? And they could have got a better deal from the Baltimore Ravens, who I believe were offering a second-round pick, right? And, like, my setting for years has always been, like, you keep the player. He plays for you. It doesn't matter. And, like, the more and more I I'm trying to mature and grow a little, I get back to this thing. When someone is done with you, sometimes you just have to cut your losses. And I know that we don't want to get rid of assets and you need them and you got to do this and you got to do that. But there is something to be said. Not every time. There is something to be said for culture. I'm not saying it's the end all be all. Sometimes talent way overrides the culture and it does not matter. You can have the greatest team chemistry of all time. If you suck and you're the 2016 Niners, you suck. I don't care if you guys all are kumbaya and best friends. Huh. All right. I don't. There's a range here when we have these discussions. I like Kuminga. I think he's a good player. Do I think he's the greatest? No. Do I think he's the worst? No. I think he can really help them. The Warriors have real flaws if they want to win big, right? But to me, the player's done with you. He's done playing for you. He's done. Now, the asset controller in me is like, you can't get rid of him for nothing. You can't just get rid of him. I think in this circumstance, knowing what we know about what has sabotaged the Warriors seasons the last few years has been the relationships, the chemistries, the stuff that has very little to do with the actual on-court stuff. Contracts, frustrations amongst teammates, fighting, you know, arguing over playing time, status, money that's owed to you. It has really, like, put a ceiling on whatever the team could do performance-wise on the floor. It's hamstrung them. So I look at the Kuminga situation, and it's like, yeah, they need him. Duh. Of course they need him. Like, okay, they're giving him the most money. It's not about money. Yeah, he's done playing for you. And so, like, I'm ready to just wave the white flag on this one as much as it pains me to do. And if you have to get pennies on the dollar, so be it. So be it. I don't think they can roll into another year like, hey, like in this hypothetical, he takes the one-year deal and he takes that qualifying offer and then you could move him maybe at some point, or he takes the two-year deal and you could maybe move him down the line. I don't know if I want to just reintroduce him into this situation and have this be a daily conversation on the roster. Is he going to play? Is he going to start? Should he play? How much more can he? Like, is he frustrated? Is he happy? We're reading his body language on the bench. Like, I don't think this is fair to Kuminga. I don't think this is fair to the other players. I don't think this is fair to the coach. I just think you're setting yourself up for a nightmare scenario where you're going to have to walk through landmines at the beginning of next year. And the last thing I want to do when you've only got a couple years left of Steph Curry is to navigate a minefield right now. And yeah, I know I'm dealing away something that I actually need to help my team on the floor, but I don't want to reintroduce any more malcontent stuff after seeing the last 3 years of Warrior basketball, because I think a big part of why they've struggled on the floor has been all the other stuff, not X's and O's. And that's why it keeps coming.